Bengals finished their draft. We'll talk about those picks coming up next on the Cincinnati Podcast.
It's an exciting time to be a Bengals fan.
We got a special show, as always, the voice of the Bengals,
Dan
Orr,
Willie Anderson,
Corey Dillon.
The name of this thing is called Cincinnati, and I'm not going to stop.
Talk to us about that roller coaster season.
I'm still going to give you the same AJ.
I'm going to work as hard as I can to be the best.
Always working ever since I met y'all, bro.
I got to get you a top five receiver.
Better, man.
Watch out for us.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Cincinnati Podcast. We are your hosts, Ace and Zim. The Bengals just added 10 new players to their roster. We're going to break them down in this special midday episode of the Cincinnati Podcast. Before we get into it, I got to check in with my partner. Haven't talked to him since, I think, playback for the most part. Zim, how you doing today, bro?
Pretty damn good. I'm doing really good, man. I'm excited. Yes, somebody says, is this live? You darn tootin'. We're live, buddy. We don't play around. No note cards. We in here cooking. But I feel really good, man. Like, playback was a success, bro. It was hella people in there. I couldn't believe how many people were in there. So I was really excited.
It was like 3,000. 3,000, 4,000 almost, like.
It was like, bro, it was almost 4,000. And the second that we came back, I'm thinking like, man, it's going to be super late. It was like 900 people in their lives. So it was crazy. I think we've been seeing that too on Cincinnati, though. People are really excited about the draft. And so many people have been gravitating to the shows and trying to get that information right before the draft. So it just carried over. And I think we had a successful draft. You did a special with Bleacher Report. How did that go?
Yeah, it was dope. Was on Bleacher Report as part of the AFC North roundtable. It was pretty dope to kind of get their perspective on certain things, see how everything kind of played out. My man G. Bush wasn't too happy about the Browns taking a guard in the third round.
Why though? Because I was asking them that. They don't think that he's going to play immediately?
They don't think he's going to play immediately. And then when you see like other teams in the division, I feel like the Bengals – kind of started something with the weapons race. When he saw the Bengals go back and get a receiver and the Steelers kind of follow the same thing, he kind of was expecting them to also pick up a wide receiver or a weapon. And when they didn't do that, he was like, man, we're not keeping up with the rest of the division. So I think that's what it really was. And then the fact that offensive line is kind of one of their strengths. And he was like, you know, we already got Joel Bentonio and all of that. This dude's not going to play this year. It kind of sounded like when Bengals fans, like initially, not all Bengals fans, but when they initially reacted to the Mims pick, it was like, oh, we want impact and stuff like that. So he was expecting that. And I think when they saw the two AFC teams, the AFC North teams in front of them pick weapons and then they picked the guard, he was not liking that whatsoever. So it was a dope experience, though. Shout out to Bleacher Report for having me on. And hopefully we can get the Wincy boys on Bleacher Report. So we're going to try to get that in the works as well. So if you guys haven't, make sure that you subscribe to us on YouTube. And then you never know. Check us out if we're on Bleacher Report as well. So we're working on that behind the scenes. But it was a dope experience, bro. I mean, the whole draft, I think, was a dope experience for sure. Let's get into some of these prospects. We'll get into that coming up.
I'm really the best in the league. You know that. Y'all respect.
All right, man. We didn't get to talk about Amarius Mims. I've been saying Amarius for so long, I got to say his name properly. Amarius Mims out of Georgia. Somewhat of a guy that looks like he was grown in the science lab, right? Like he's 6'8 or 6'7, 340. Doesn't have a gut. Like that's kind of crazy. I feel like a lot of people have just been talking on Twitter this whole week about how big of a person he is. But the other thing about him is that this is a kid out of Georgia, comes from a championship pedigree, was able to make some kind of impact on that team, even in the national championship when they played against Ohio State. That's some of his best film. Really held his own against an edge rusher who kind of dominated Olufoshanu and gave Joe Alt some issues as well. He stood 10 toes up. His next gen stat score is an 82. His production score is an 82. So there's a lot of people, and I have also talked about it. That was one of the reasons that I was down on him, was the durability concerns, right? Like, he does have the durability concerns, but it could just be a one-off because we haven't seen him actually get the chance as a starter until this season. He came in for Warren McClendon, and this is coming from a Georgia coach that values seniority. So some people may be saying, why did he only start 8 games? Well, a little bit of that is him getting hurt. He had 2 injuries that he sustained. So really, to me, he kind of has 6.5 games, I guess you would say, of experience. But that's really the only reason. The seniority is probably the reason why he wasn't able to get in. I actually also heard he considered entering the transfer portal and almost went to Florida State because he wanted to play, ended up coming back to Georgia. This dude has an 87-inch wingspan. To me, the RAS score is crazy. It's all about potential with this pick, but he's not a raw prospect. This is a kid that does need a little bit more polish, right? But he's not like a raw prospect. If you needed him to step in day one, he could. It might be a little bit of a mixed bag of results. However, the Bengals aren't going to have to do that because we already have Trent Brown and Orlando Brown Jr. I know initially going into it, I wasn't the biggest fan. I feel like now, kind of sitting and thinking about it, and thinking about the potential, I actually do like the pick. Zim, what are your thoughts on Amarius Mims, like, coming to Cincinnati and him being the pick? You kind of did foreshadow this when we were on the Malik podcast.
The Malik one, and remember when we had, what's his name before? What's the dude that we just we had right before the draft? I said potentially
Kyle, it was talking about Kyle.
I said Mims on that show too because I recognized he would be there. And when you look at the rest of the board, I don't feel like there's a guy that's behind it that I'd rather have, in my opinion. Right. The board just says, and it kind of played out a lot of the ways that I thought it would play. The Jets not taking Rob Bowers because they don't have the luxury to take Rob Bowers, as I stated a million times on that Malik show or whatever. But moving forward, you know, like, Mims was the one guy that out of the big, when people label this draft that had tackles in it and it's so generational, whatever, they're including Amarius. You said it's not Amarius, it's Amarius.
It's Amarius, yeah.
So they're including Amarius Mims in that conversation. But he represented, to me, the last of the top tier ones at the top of this draft. Fatano, you could throw in there as well, too. But then after that, then it was like a steep, you know, drop off. And I think the Bengals probably didn't see Fatano as a tackle. They probably saw him as a guard. And as we learned later in the draft, they are really high on Volson, and they are really high on the depth. We're going to get into that, the depth behind Volson as well, too, which is a bit of a head scratcher. So if it's Mims, I just thought that the board would show you that. I thought that Newton, I think the Bengals liked it. I think Hobson had alluded to this or had talked about it on one of the shows. I was told that the Bengals actually tried to trade back up into the 30s to go get Newton before he was taken at 36. But keep in mind, you would have had to give up pick number 97, which ultimately became McKinley Jackson. So you could, if it's me, you know, give me Johnny Newton. But at the same time, you know, Mims, I think I had time to think about it. That's why when I was in playback, we were all shocked from Bowers, like Raiders taking him. Yeah. After that, I saw teams. I said, the Bengals going to have to go up and get him. And it's kind of like what I was saying, like on the Malik show, I said, once he gets past like 12, but the thing that messed up is because Penix went. Mm-hmm. And once Penix went, the Broncos were like, yeah, we're not getting out of this spot and ruining our chances. Like, if we get back to 18, we get to any of that, then the Raiders are going to take the quarterback from us. So we can't afford to move back. So once it got to 12, 13, I said, okay, mm-hmm. Bengals got a shot to do this and move up. I think that they hypothetically could have probably traded with the Raiders, but the problem that they would have had is the Raiders are at a spot where they were like, probably Bowers is head and shoulders the most talented player on the board for us right now. And everybody that's under that, I don't view him the same as Bowers. So a lot of people probably like, why did they take him? And then so once he's gone and then Murphy's gone, you saw the Lou Anarumo reaction. I mean, that's where you're looking at. To me, the best player on the board at that time was then Amarius Mims. And the part that I've been preaching the whole time about impact and all that stuff kind of went out the door. The clock is ticking. You're not really trying to trade out the pick. And if you do trade out the pick, what's the compensation? And I just think that it put him at the spot And that's what I always felt about Mims, is that they're going to have to make a decision. Are we solving this offensive line thing once and for all? Are the guys that are on our board close to Amarius Mims? I don't think so. And then thirdly, you know, like, we need to make sure that we have depth behind Trent Brown in case he does get injured, which I know everybody's kind of foreshadowing, which I don't like, but it is what it is. And I think that they're going to find a role for Amarius Mims year one. I think jumbo packages, they did that with Cody Ford. They did that with Akeem Adeniji. I think they'll figure out some stuff for him in that regard. I think you can have his big butt pulling across the line and hitting people out in space. There's a ton of stuff you could do with him year one. But ultimately, you got the better guy at that spot without moving. If they move, the conversation is different. They didn't. I like the pick.
All right, round two, the Bengals went defensive tackle. Chris Jenkins out of Michigan, the captain. They call him the mutant. What were your thoughts on the pick when you saw it come in?
I thought same thing at this spot is they – if you're going to neglect the position, no Tier Tart, DJ Reader, you don't resign, then you have to go D-tackle, and you're going to have to do it early because the guys later on aren't going to get – you got to replace those snaps, and you got to replace the Zachary Carter snaps. Ultimately, like, figure out a way to get those 500 snaps off the board. So I knew within the first four rounds they had to come out with like two defensive tackle guys, and I think they did that. I also thought that they would give us two offensive linemen before the first five rounds. We'll talk about that later. But Chris Jenkins had the highest rush win rate in college football. He has a little bit of upside. He only had four sacks in college, but he does have the trajectory of being able to establish and get some more pass moves. He's a lot like his father. He has some toughness with him that I think they like. He played in very meaningful games from a power conference school. You got all the pedigree and all these different things in your favor. It's not the sexiest pick for everyone, but because the wide receivers, the pool was so large at that spot, I wasn't even thinking wide receiver at that spot. And then some of the offensive linemen that I like, I thought it might have been a little too rich for like some of the guards right there. You had to address the need. I think long-term and currently right now, he's a part of the rotation, instant impact, and it's exactly what I look for at that position. He might not pop off and give you sacks and all that stuff like that, but he will stop the run in a one-gap scheme. As long as they don't let him try to double-team people and stuff, he should be fine. What was your reaction on that one?
Yeah, I think very similar. I think he is a super athletic player. When you look at the next-gen stats, they give him a 75 overall. A lot of that has to do with the athleticism. The production is a little average in terms of consistency and production there, and they're expecting that, you know, that's going to improve with him being in the pros. I think, like you said, he's probably going to line up and be our three tech in this game. He comes out of a defense that plays heavy nickel, which is something that Lou Anarumo is definitely used to. He's 22 years old. He's got a 4.91 in the 40. He ended up doing 29 reps on the bench press. I know a lot of people are talking about the dumbbell exercise that he's done, but this dude comes from a football pedigree. He's got a high floor. I think that he's a guy that can step in possibly and compete with Zach Carter in training camp to take that role on. I personally think that he's probably going to come in a little bit after BJ Hill and a little after Sheldon Rankins, but he is the future to me of that position. And he does still have to kind of polish that interior pass rush a little bit, right? Like, so maybe they can work on that in the meantime, but he is a guy that's going to be able to be a dual threat defensive tackle for them. So I thought that it was cool. It was pretty obvious that he would kind of be the pick just because he was super high on Prime. A lot of people talked about him. They visited with him. He was actually, I think, the number one D tackle on Prime. Ooh. But he had a lot of characteristics that people point to that are like, okay, the Bengals will take a defensive tackle like this. I started to hear a lot of people saying his name around that time. So kind of figured that he would be the pick, especially once we saw Johnny Newton come off the board, as you kind of alluded to. Like, Johnny Newton came off the board pretty quick to the Commanders. So not too surprising. I like the pick. I just wonder, like, you know, what is their plan for him? How much are they going to play him the first year? And I hope that it's in a situation where we get to see Chris Jenkins this season. Round three.
Let me ask you this. Hold on. Before we ask this, I think that this does signal a bit of a change in the guards. You were talking about him, you know, playing three or playing in a three tech. I think that they're going to have a more single gap stuff, right, where they're going to show a lot of teams five-man fronts. So he would anchor the middle of that and not be lined up directly over top of the nose, but playing like 2-eye and playing it between the A and the B gap. And then you got this five-man front, but you got B.J. Hill and Rankins right next to him. And he's the centerpiece of that.
Oh,
and he
doesn't have him there just being kind of like the run stopper then.
Yeah, and you don't have to he doesn't have to take on double teams, but all he has to do is win his matchup and be able to get through, and he doesn't have to double team. We did a lot of that in the 49ers game, and I think that that's a big signal change that I think a lot of teams, particularly when we play in the North, you're going to see a lot of five-man fronts, and I think that that is a big change in philosophy. I want to ask you this. The guy that you were on there with the Browns, because this is a thing that I was thinking about, Mike Hall went after him. Right. So for like a straight-up three-tech, I don't think it matches up with what I'm saying, but he gives you a lot of like what Rankins, Ogunjobi give you. What was the Browns' reaction to the Mike Hall pick, and was that somebody that you were looking at? I don't know what he was on Prime.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty decently ranked on Prime. I wasn't looking at him just because of like the injury history. I heard like the ceiling was high, but that dude really couldn't really finish seasons and stuff like that. So I thought that he had a high ceiling, but I felt like it was high risk, high reward. So I think the Browns fans, of course, you know, them being from Ohio, I think that they like the pick. But for me, I was just like, that's cool or whatever. But if this dude can't stay healthy, I mean, it is what it is. And I think that that's been the story even from some of the diehard Ohio State fans. I've even heard them talk about, like, I don't know if I want to take him just because of the injury history that he's had. Spoke to my cousin about him. He was like, yeah, I remember that dude from like 2 years ago. It was kind of a mixed bag, but I could see somebody liking the potential in them. But I kind of felt like they were going to take Chris Jenkins anyway. And then you kind of look at the pedigree that he has, national champion, his dad. I think that there are a little bit of different players play style wise, but I wasn't mad to see Michael Hall come off the board after him. Go ahead.
Hear me out, partner.
Got you.
Migos Reloaded. Not 2.0. Reloaded.
This pick, when it came in, bro, all my professionalism, all of that went out the window. Like everything stopped, and I just felt like it's over for him. It's over for him. As soon as I seen Jermaine Burton, and the crazy thing is,
remember Malik was high on Burton
High on Burton. I was high on Burton as well, because like
I was casual. I seen him, but when I heard the character stuff, I just stopped watching him.
Yeah, so for me, when I first started doing Prime, Jermaine Burton was the number one overall receiver, and I went and looked at his highlights immediately. I'm like, this dude is a problem. Like, everything is a deep bomb. Like, he would kill. And I remember, I think it was someone reached out to me, and they were like, what about the character concerns? And this is early in the process before I even got, like, the beast was out and I got any of the character information about him. So when I heard that, I was like, man, I don't know how the Bengals are going to do. But we kind of had this conversation going back and forth on spaces. And I was saying, like, some people were just like, oh, the Bengals don't take character flag guys at all in the Zach Taylor era. And I was like, nah, that's not true, because you got Mark Walton. You got some players currently on the team now where there was like some stuff that kind of had, you know, flags and stuff like that. And so I'm like, I don't know if that's completely true. I'm like, we know that they like captains and all of that, but I don't think it's like a foregone conclusion that they don't like guys. And another thing that kind of hinted me in this is McKinley Jackson. He kind of has some of that stuff. And so I'm like, the fact that they brought him in, bro, I don't think that they're doing that if they're just like, I'm completely taking these guys off the board. So when Jermaine Burton was the pick, bro, to me, that said two things. Like, number one, they did their research on both of these guys and they feel like it's a non-issue going forward. But number two, it's like they're going to feel like they've established a strong enough culture to bring these guys in the locker room and maximize the talent that they have. And Jermaine Burton, the kid, is like, he takes the top off of any defense. This is something different than Tyler Boyd. I've seen a lot of people saying Tyler Boyd. This is not Tyler Boyd. Like, he is completely a much faster, much explosive player. No disrespect to TB, but that's just not his, you know, his play style. Jermaine Burton is a guy that is going to keep defenses guessing. He can play on the outside. He can play in the inside. He can make explosive plays. And you're giving Joe Burrow this weapon with T. Higgins and with Ja'Marr Chase. Good luck. I think that's what I said immediately when the pick came in and I saw the notification to everybody on that AFC North panel. I was like, good luck. The Bengals got Jermaine Burton. It's Migos Reloaded. It's nasty. This dude is going to be a problem. I can't wait to get him in. He's been working with TJ Husmanzada, which that means, you know, his route techniques and all of that are going to be fluid. Like, this was a hell of a pick for the Bengals. It was my favorite pick of the draft. I know you love this pick as well. What were your thoughts on Jermaine Burton?
Hey, look, you see, I'm making hype videos. I'm doing everything already because I keep on telling everybody. There's people listening to this right now. Even our boy, I forgot his name, but he said, man, you like weapons too much. I said, you know what? I do. And at the end of the day, I do think that the Bengals dropped the ball on the interior offensive line in the trenches, because once you go Amarius Mims, I feel like the stamp on the draft should be trenches, 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 trenches. And they did a lot of it, but they didn't do enough for me. I think that the trenches or whatever, this offseason – had to be a high priority. You did that with Rankins. You did a couple of different things, but you lost Reader and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, 90% of the Bengals fans I know, you know, me and you, we're the in-between of the younger generation connecting to the older generation. So we're like the in-between group. And most of the people that we grew up, you know, it was Ocho. I mean, like, of course it was guys before then. But really what got me diehard was Ocho. Even before that, you know, like, I can't really stamp, like, Carl Pickens like I can't stamp Ocho or A.J. Green. You feel me? So
right.
The core of what made me a diehard is the wide receiver position. The core of what the Bengals are is the wide receiver position. The core of what we've done on every good team, whether it was 2005, 2015, 1988, the wide receiver position, 1980. Yeah, 84. Like all of these years, the wide receiver position. And you said this before the draft. The Bengals should come out of here with two wide receivers. And people were like, what? Yes, this wide receiver class was stacked. And guys like Jermaine Burton, who normally would have been a second round pick, fringe back at the end of first round, had the traits and the characteristics. And I'm going to say it, he's a lot like Doug Ball. When I've seen that comp, I think Max, or Matt Coleman, he said it too, but Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, he reminds me of those where it's inside, outside. You look at him versus the top wide receivers in the draft that just went. Most of those guys are primarily slot, whether it's Ladd McConkey, whether it's outside Marvin Harrison. He was one of the few guys that had 30% in the slot, and he had like some of the outside stuff in primarily on the outside. He could do all of that. His deep threat versus catches, I put up a chart on my Twitter. If y'all go check me out, Zim Hude. If you go check that out, it's a chart that I got from this company. I forgot the name, but I cited it. But amongst Marvin Harrison, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb and company, he's at the top of this as far as intermediate and deep passes and catches. He caught those at a 53% rate, higher than a lot of guys that everybody liked in this draft. He was a dog, and I thought that the Bengals getting this dude in this spot. He played for six other teams. He played for six teams. The character issues and all these different things. We're going to get a battle at camp. Him versus Cam Taylor, Britt, and Ja'Marr Chase and them boys talking. Like, do you know? Somebody in the comments was talking about naming the wide receivers. Don't you forget Yoshi. So now, like Ace was saying, the multiplicity of being able to be interchangeable before play. Teams can't say, all right, we know what we're going to do the whole time. We're going to double team Ja'Marr Chase on this side. We're going to take our number one corner, go one-on-one with T. Higgins, or we're going to double both on the outside. You can't do none of that. You don't know what we're going to line up with. If Yoshi's out there, you got to respect that long speed. If Burton's out there, you got to respect, I might go trips bunch, and you don't know if I'm coming. I'm going out of the formation. I'm going down the field. You don't know, because Tyler Boyd, like you said, I love to death. the threat of him on the outside is non-existent. The threat of Burton in the deep passes and the deep ability now with Gesicki stretching the seams. This is Migos Reloaded. I mean, we are like,
forget, you got Trent Irwin, Charlie Jones, like,
bro, I'm telling you right now, I don't like to say, that's why I say Reloaded. I don't know if they'll ever be what the Migos were. I don't know because Tyler Boyd just don't grow on trees. The multiplicity in the formations, and we're going to get into the next pick. The things that we're able to do from a game plan standpoint makes us very, very unpredictable. And that in itself is dynamite.
Facts. It is. And I mean, one of the biggest reasons that I made the t-shirt, the original one underneath it said culture. The Bengals culture is wide receivers, man. But that brings us to the next pick. McKinley Jackson. Now, I was on the show, so I didn't realize, like, what was going on Twitter. This pick took a lot of heat, and honestly, like, I can see it, but I can't at the same time because going into the draft, I remember there was a day on Spaces. I believe it was when we were trying to figure out whether or not DJ Reader was gonna be the guy, and I kind of had a feeling that it's potentially a situation where he could walk away. So what are the backup options, right? And if it wasn't something that was going to be taken care of in free agency, what did the position look like in the draft? Well, the scariest part for me while I was freaking out that day was there was only two options in the draft for somebody that is a straight up nose tackle, zero tech to play there. That was draftable. Like there were some guys that were like seventh rounders. Like I'm not bringing in a guy that's a seventh round pick to start at nose tackle. And those two options were one, Tavondre Sweat. And the second one was McKinley Jackson. And so we saw Tavondre Sweat, which I was kind of shocked by that. Tavondre Sweat goes in the second round when everybody's saying, oh, he's not going to go into day three possibly because of the DWI situation. And I just thought like, man, the only person we can get is McKinley Jackson. I get people feeling like it was a reach or something like that. I don't think it was a reach for the Bengals because if they don't take McKinley Jackson and let's say in the fourth round, somebody just decides, hey, I have a nose tackle need too. Let me just take McKinley Jackson because there's no nose tackles literally left that can really play and be on an NFL roster that I can't just get in UDFA. I'm going to take McKinley Jackson. I'm not mad at them doing it because he is a one tech. They had the need on the roster. He's a guy that can immediately step in and give you some quality snaps there. And no, he's not DJ Reader. Like, I think he's a DJ Reader replacement in terms of his body size, him being like 320 or something like that. But he's not a guy that I'm expecting to play on third down and any of that. But he can be a run stepper. He can take up double teams. He can step in and do that immediately day one. And so me personally, I was cool with the pick. Like, I don't have that much criticism for it because it's like, he's the only one that was there. Like, what did you expect? Like, you would have been mad. You would have been, like, grabbing your picket, like, your pickets and your signs. Like, why didn't the Bengals get a zero tech, like, after that? Because you wouldn't have any options that are in free agency. Tyre Tart already signed with Miami. You literally wouldn't have had anything there. So you would have been, what's your plan? To start an undrafted free agent at nose tackle? Is it to bring back the same guys that you kind of already had there in Josh Tupou? I just feel like McKinley Jackson might end up being a lot more solid than people think. And he's going to be under a microscope. We've seen these kind of picks and how they go up under a microscope. But all I will say is I'm not trying to call anybody a casual or anything. But if you don't see this man have a bunch of tackles and if you don't see him have a bunch of sacks, that does not mean that he's not doing his job because his job is to pretty much take on double teams and step up in the gap. Like it's not to make like super big impactful plays. He does a lot of things that you won't see on the stat sheet. So I actually like the McKinley Jackson pick and I might be in the minority on this, but I actually like it, especially like hearing him talk, his attitude. He just seems like an AFC North type tackle, defensive tackle. Zen, what were your thoughts on the McKinley pick?
I thought the McKinley pick was okay. So I wasn't as excited. I thought that it was taking about 20 picks earlier than what I probably would have taken. But to your point, I looked at this too. The whole entire fourth round had three D tackles go. The D tackles aren't zero tech. They aren't whatever. Like, they have a little bit of, like, nose potential on maybe one of the guys. I think was Mingo or something like that, I think, from LSU.
Possibly the kid out of Miami, too, Leonard Taylor.
Leonard Taylor. What round?
I want to say, like, seventh round, sixth, seventh round or something
like
that.
So there was, like, three in the fourth. None. No D tackles went at all in the fifth. And then the next – what I would call like nose was Christian Boyd, who I really like. They took him in the sixth, but that was like a whole two rounds later. So to your point, yeah, like what there wasn't. And the way that the Bengals did the offseason, not doing the reader thing, and they had no aspirations, I'm guessing, of signing like a Calais Campbell. They were like, we're gonna do what Kansas City did at the cornerback position. We're gonna do what we did in 2020 at the linebacker position. We're going to throw bodies at this position, and one of these people going to stick, and we're going to bring in guys, even UDFAs, and we're going to throw all these bodies at it. That room is really crowded now. And so I just think that they were like, we're going to get cheaper at that position, and we're going to do it by injecting that room with you. And I thought, like, you know, the Jenkins pick with McKinley signaled that. And I like those together.
Yeah.
I don't think now from a tape perspective, we did this a lot in playback. I don't like them against double teams. I talked about the single gap stuff, and I talked to, you know, Max a lot about this too. Miles Murphy's brother, who was in playback with us, shout out to him because he's really a student of the game too. And we were saying that we love him in 4-3 shape, where you're pretty much just holding your, you know, like, say he gives a spelling for McKinley, like how I was saying, like a five-man front. You're just holding, and you're not asking the guy to go and shoot a gap or anything. You're just holding serve to make sure that nobody, you know, goes past you, and you're holding it up for linebackers to be able to play free. And you're not getting put on your ass. You're not at any point getting pushed back. And that's all I really need you to do. I think McKinley Jackson, this might sound a little nasty, he might end up being the Drew Sample of this pick, of this draft. And when I say that, it sounds bad on the surface. But the only problem with Drew Sample is of how early he was taken. If Drew Sample as a blocking tight end got drafted in the fourth or fifth round, we would all be looking at it like, bro, that's a masterclass. Because he's now on his third contract. He had a 1 year the year before, and he just signed a 2 year deal. He's one of the best blocking tight ends in football, and he has the multiple. He has a chance to be multiple by possibly going into fullback role some of the season. You saw him last year do some of that stuff and split back looks, being able in pass pro. I think that Drew Sample at the time was a hated pick because it was so early. But if you look at what he's done in the NFL, it checked out to what his draft said he was going to do. If McKinley Jackson can be solid in those spots, give us maybe two sacks. Who cares about his sacks? We just need him to be a solid force up front. Who cares about his football sacks on quarterbacks? We just need him to be solid up front in the run game and hold serve. And if he does that and, you know, give us 200-something, 300 snaps year one, and it builds up to be something better, I think Devine has said Pat Sims. If he just it becomes like that level, that's good. I don't care what round it is. So there we go.
For sure, for sure. Here's a super chat from our guy Diddy. Said T cut his hair. I'm upset because I can't grow hair. I haven't seen it yet, bro. I was kind of like, wow.
Clean.
Yeah, he got clean. What? He got the low boy or what? What he got?
He a little bit lower than me. Kind of like the P Diddy a little bit. The Anthony Edwards.
Okay. Nah, that's cool. Shout out to DeMarco Days for the super chat. Appreciate that.
Shout out to Anthony Edwards taking over the league and about to go and cook some boys up. Yeah, just swept Durant, Booker, and them boys.
With a broom and then boomed on them. That was nasty.
Gave him the broom, threw up the 4-0 after he put 40 points on them and just gave him 40. I mean, gave him 40 at their house, 4-0, sent them home. Sorry if you're a Suns fan, but spirit flight. Peace out.
Suns are down bad. They got swept in the first round.
Bradley Beal better never be called an all-star in this league ever again.
He's trash. He's done.
He's not Trey. He's a good basketball, but he is not an all-star. I'm sorry. All right, we're getting off topic. Let's get back to the
draft. Not anymore. But Eric Aul, let's talk about him. The tight end out of Iowa, transfer from Michigan, played in a pro-style offense. Obviously did not participate because he had the injuries. The next gen score is an overall 69, which I believe puts him at average. He visited a lot. He's a fluid H tight end who has good route running skills, smooth hands as a pass catcher. But his blocking ability is somewhat questionable. And then he doesn't have the high level athleticism. I thought like one of the, and I might not want to say this just because he is athletic, but somebody kind of likened him to CJ Uzomah play style wise. And I could kind of see that when I was watching some of the highlights. What are your thoughts on Eric Aul? Because obviously he's coming back from a knee injury, I believe it is, but he did go to Iowa. So I do feel like he was able to learn some great technique there. And we already know the resume, especially with guys like Sam LaPorta, Hockenson, that have come from Iowa. What are your thoughts on the Eric Aul pick?
I love the pick. I thought if he didn't have the injury concerns, I think he would have been grouped right behind like Sanat. I think that it's risky. Mm-hmm. No prospect is going to be perfect. I think this year was the year that we said, as the front office said, if we can approve this guy and our medical is clear, as we don't care about the character concern stuff. We don't care about Amarius Mims, like with the, you know, like the injuries that he did have. We believe in this guy. We're going to, like, they're taking some chances. Eric Aul has the option, I think, of being one of the better tight ends in the North, bro. I really do. I just think it's not going to happen overnight. Tight end, linebacker, to me, are the hardest positions to transition from. He had a spinal surgery. Super risky. He said that that's not even a thing. That he's coming back from the ACL. He said he's going to be ready for training camp. I tell him, chill out. We don't need you. We don't need you that early. We got some guys that, you know, we feel good about.
Can hold it down until he gets better.
Get all the way back. Make sure if you're going to take that level of risk, you got to make sure that you nurture the actual, you know, decision that you make. So I think that he has. I put up a 30-second clip this morning. Another shameless plug for Zim Hude on Twitter. I put up a clip. I showed him in the seam, not breaking stride, catching the ball, going through the seam. He has a tightrope ability to be able to catch a ball on the sideline, get both feet down. He also has yak ability, which I really like. And he is a big, large tight end that I think that cannot be, like, easily tackled. I like that pick. I think it's super risky. You had 10 picks. You, like, let your nuts hang. Let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I don't – like, this is what the next-gen stat stuff is saying. Like, I like to dig into the film. I'll definitely be looking at Eric Aul's All-22 to get a more insightful look at him. But I think one of the hardest things to project at the next level is tight end. Like, who's to say that Eric Aul, like Zim is saying, can't be the best possible tight end in the division someday? It seems like the upside is there. Look at the programs that he played for, Michigan, and you talk about Iowa – those are some key programs that he played for. Obviously, he's got to get over the issues, but, you know, a guy like Gronk has some back issues coming out. So hopefully Eric Aul can bounce back from that. But like you said, right now they got a room with Mike Gesicki, another player we'll also talk about a little later, Drew Sample, and some of the other tight ends. So they can hold it down until he gets back. He doesn't have to rush back. And it's dope to get another local kid that grew up in the Cincinnati area from Fairfield to get them to come back to the city. So definitely appreciate that aspect of it as well. Seeing that they visited with him, it wasn't a surprise. Like, that was a very familiar name that I saw. And it kind of seemed like that was the theme of this draft. Like, a lot of the guys that they met with on the top 30 visits, coincidentally, they ended up taking some of those guys. This, now that I've done my research on this kid, has become one of my favorite picks of the draft. Corner Josh Newton out of TCU. More of a man corner, however, does have some zone ability as well, and is a guy that can play multiple positions. He can play inside and outside, has a lot of hip fluidity, change of direction, reactive athleticism, press man ability that will definitely help him at the next level. The only thing that I heard people really talk about is kind of him with the deep speed, as well as like the open field tackling, which as a corner, we had our one guy on here breaking down the draft. Like, Deion Sanders didn't want to tackle anybody. So to me personally, I know you got to tackle in the North, but if he can be a good man corner, like, I'm good with that. I was actually surprised the 33rd team had this guy as a low-end starter. He was one of the highest graded guys for the Bengals draft class from them graded him as a low-end starter. So to get a guy like this in that round is great value, and especially after the run on corners happened early, I think that was day two. It was like all the corners were coming off of the board. So for them to be able to get a guy, the quality of Josh Newton to add to that room with Dax Hill now possibly transferring over. Well, not possibly. He is going to be transferring over as a corner. Now that corner room looks a lot better than it probably did. It's a lot younger, but it's a lot better than it was before the draft. Before the draft, I was wondering, like, how are they going to get a corner? Are they going to sign a veteran? Like, what's the plan there? Newton, I think, adds some stability to the room. What were your thoughts on Newton? Because he's been kind of going crazy on social media, too. I've been seeing the clips. He's got a lot of quotables. I think he had a good call with the media, too, that a lot of people were charged up about. What were your thoughts just on Josh Newton out of TCU?
I never watched him before the draft. I had even Eric All, I had barely seen him, so I'm not like the things that I just said about Eric All, those are things that I'm watching now. Like, I need to go watch Josh Newton a lot more. PFF had him as like out of their power conference school as one of the highest grade corners to all SEC. I think, not SEC, whatever conference that is, two times in a row. So the dude is in a scrub. At the spot that he was taken, I would have liked to see them go interior offensive line at that spot. And that was my only gripe with that pick. I just thought that the board was saying interior offensive line. And then to watch the guy, like the Steelers take McCormick and take guys that I really liked around this, like all of these different guys, Bordellinis, all these other guys that I really, really like. I was very disappointed in that, especially to start off the draft with that. The Newton one, it does make sense if he's not – if they're saying Dax Hill is going to be a boundary corner, because I think we'll probably close the show with those comments, I think, that happened today. But if they're going to say that, then I'm thinking hypothetically maybe they'll have him in the slot. It's hard to say, because if you're running a 4-5 in 2024, you can't really keep up with the guys that are on the outside in the NFL anymore. Right. So I don't know how he fits in with that. So That was one of my, at the time, one of my least favorite picks. The more I'm learning about him, the more I like the character and the person itself. He absolutely gives DJ – if DJ Ivy isn't right, he's going to be able to battle that guy. And then also for people that are down on Jalen Davis, I think you have your backup slot corner right there.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely going to bring some competition there. This is another pick that I love. Tanner McLaughlin, tight end out of Arizona, broke all of Gronk's records. The only thing, Zim might feel like he has his AARP card at 25, but played in a multiple offense, was able to do some things there, was highly productive there. What were your thoughts on this pick? Because, like, I remember we were in playback, and I just saw him up on the screen, and I
was
talking about something completely different, and I was like, who is this dude?
We watched him a lot. Shout out to my guy Brady. He was the first person that put me on to him. We watched Tanner McLaughlin a lot. I didn't know how old he was, but one of the harder positions to transition into the NFL is tight end because of the blocking responsibilities and receiving ones. I think that the Bengals went with this approach. Early in the draft, we're not moving up to go get a Brock Bowers. Very clear. Mm-hmm. We're not giving up draft capital for that. But we're going to dismiss this whole "we don't use tight ends" conversation. We're going to take a guy, Tanner McLaughlin. If he was 21, sure, he probably wouldn't have been in the same conversation as Eric All, Sanat, and all those dudes like that. He's much older, but I think you know what you get. And because it's tough to transition into the NFL, into that spot, I think you day one have a guy that's ready. I think he pushes Tanner Hudson to the bottom of the room or like practice while he's out of there. I think currently right now, he's ready to go. And because he is older, cool. You're not trying to project what I think he's going to be. I think that's, you're doing that with Eric All. I think with him, you're saying he's ready to go. He's ready to play. That's your tight end three, I guess, behind, depending on how you look at Sample and Gesicki or whatever. And then I think that what's his name is at the bottom of the thing. I think Turner Hudson is going to get beat out by McLaughlin, and I think day one he's going to be a force, though. Like, he can catch, and he's one of the better catching tight ends in this whole entire draft.
And I think some people even had him as the second tight end of the class. Like, some, I don't
was,
know
if was that Brugler?
Jeremiah or Brugler, one of them.
It was Brugler or Daniel Jeremiah's the second in the class. But from an NFL front office, like I said, like you kind of alluded to, he's 25. So it's not a super long-term thing, but it is a thing. You know what you get from the get.
Like, he, to me, he's good enough for the window, which is Joe's career. But I would say the window is the next, 3 to 4 years. I think that he could do some things there. This was the pick. I don't know nothing about this dude other than him being like a super athletic guy. Cedric Johnson, 21-year-old, out of the SEC, Ole Miss, played in a multiple defense. He's pretty intriguing. He doesn't have much production, but a lot of people are just saying he has a lot of high upside. If he can become a more polished pass rusher and improve his instincts against the run, a lot of people feel like he could develop into a solid rotational edge defender. I think that this is just to add more competition to that room, right? Like, especially with the end of the roster, you got Jeff Gunter and those kind of guys there. I think that he's a guy to bring in and battle with them. But I just kind of was like, all right, this is a guy that they just want to take a swing on, a la Jeff Gunter. What were your thoughts on Cedric Johnson?
It's funny you said Gunter, because I'm like, yeah, that's what's going to push him out of the, out of the practice squad or whatever. And I think he's super, super athletic. RAS score, I was trying to pull that up just now, but if you guys don't.
Yeah, it's 9.28. RAS
9.28. That's this is ranked 130 out of 17, almost 1800 defensive ends since dating back to 1987. He's undersized as far as like the weight and height. Then he, I think on the bench press, he did like 25 and stuff like that. So like as far as like his RAS score and everything like that, super high athlete. I did get a chance to watch some from him. I don't think he'll ever be like a run defender, but I do think it's like a almost like a pitch count kind of guy you bring out of there just to rush the passer, get some good quality snaps. I don't know where that ends him up on the depth chart, but I do see him as a pass rusher that could be like a pass rusher. I don't believe in him as a run stuffer. I don't know if ever. But who am I? I'm just a random ass guy like talking football. So hopefully he'll prove me wrong on that one. But there are a lot of people that probably agree with me where we only see him as just a rusher. They said the same thing about Trey Hendrickson too. Trey Hendrickson has gone on to be a pretty solid run defender as well. But, his claim to fame is rushing.
Said the same about Carl Lawson as well. 4'6", 340, 38-inch vert. So, guy with a lot of traits that could potentially pay off. And sometimes those traits do convert into being a good player. After that, they went safety with Anthony in the seventh round. I thought that was a pretty good value pick, being that he was supposed to kind of go, and I believe the fifth round or, mid-fifth round, comes from out of that same defense, literally Cedric's teammate, played a little bit in that nickel as well. He has man coverage ability. He has versatility to be either a safety or a corner, but he has to improve his tackling technique at the next level and his pursuit angles. I think that this is a guy that they could bring in to the safety room, compete with some of the guys that they already have there, see if they can get some depth. And if he doesn't work out, I think he's a guy that you could stash on the practice squad and get him onto the roster possibly next season. What are your thoughts? I just feel like he kind of is another one of those picks where it's just, let's throw him in the room and see where the chips fall, which isn't a bad thing, because a lot of people thought the same about DJ Ivy. And DJ Ivy ended up being a guy that was actually better than some people actually thought.
If Tyson Anderson comes back to any bit of form, I don't think DeJon Anthony, I don't think he can make the roster when I look at the room and what they do is suit up everything. There's a bunch of clips of him making some really solid tackles. Haven't seen full games. Don't feel too comfortable like giving a full assessment on it, but get back to me. I'm gonna tell more, but not a big fan of that pick at the time. But then the people's champ coming up next, saved the whole entire draft for me. Matt Lee, one of my guys that I remember we watched a couple times in playback. I had a list of like six interior offensive line guys. Somebody asked this on the Pulse show, and I answered this in the space. They were like, if Matt Lee is so good, why is he there in the seventh round? It's a big cluster F of all of these things that kind of – it's kind of like the Brock Bowers conversation. Why would the Jets not take Brock Bowers? A, you already drafted tight ends before. B, you got to go with other positional value in front of him. And then C, you know, like, can you use them on your team? Different things like that. I looked at the teams that were drafting ahead of us and then some of the teams behind us or whatever. They didn't have a need for center. Some of them, most teams recognize they need center and guard flexibility. I only see Matt Lee as just a center. Keep in mind, he played around 280-something at one point, 290-something. He got to the combine. I think he was at 301. A lot of teams still consider him like to be like undersized. He's like a little meatball, but he is a damn good meatball with extra sauce that you can go and cook with. That is your center of the future. I think the 2026 season will have Matt Lee as your starting center for the Cincinnati Bengals, unless they draft another center slash guard combo. But the value for NFL teams is multiple positions at guard and center. This guy is an ace, pun intended, an ace at pass blocking. I don't think he moves guys in the run game that much, but Bengals are proven to be a pass-happy team. They drafted a hell of a lot of weapons, tight end and wide receiver. He's one of the number one – he was the number one greatest center in pass blocking at PFF. So he is the dude. He's a little bit older. I think he had transferred 1 year too, so a lot of people don't really have the full tape on him, whatever. But I kind of got lucky and got a chance to watch him a bunch of times. That was my outside of Burton. That was my favorite pick in the draft. I thought he saved it, and we'll talk about draft grades in a second. But he was something that I think the Bengals need to make sure that the depth behind Trey Hill, learn Mandarin, bro. You're out of here. Like, you're not on the roster anymore. Matt Lee is coming in here to pack you up. See you. Sayonara. I wish I knew some Mandarin or something. I could be arigato right now. Like, you out of here, bro. So, yeah, that's my Matt Lee take. I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, man. I mean, the crazy part about Matt Lee is I was going through kind of the raw data of putting Prime together, and this was a couple months ago. And I remember jumping into space because when we go into spaces, there's like rarely a prospect that people don't know. And I remember being like, yo, guys, talk to me about Matt Lee, because the stuff that I'm seeing from like a production standpoint and like where the national places are grading him is just not making sense. Like, this guy looks too good to be down here, like looking at his pass block productivity and all of that. I'm just like, how are people not talking about this guy? And then I started to look more into him. And he was a guy that I feel like really flew under the radar. And I think that, like Zim is saying, this was one of the best picks in the draft for the Bengals. Not only, like, even if you get this guy two rounds before, I think he's still that guy. The fact that they got him in the seventh round is a steal. The funny thing is my wife's actually getting ready to graduate from UCF. He's actually a UCF alum. He actually was playing at UCF before he transferred to Miami for his last year. And apparently he was very good at UCF, but felt like he wanted to go to the ACC to prove that his game was that in that same on another level a little bit, right? Going to the ACC. And he actually had a really good season this past season for Miami, for the Hurricanes. And he's a very intelligent and experienced center, and his footwork and hand use allows him to be a versatile interior person at the next level. Now, he has struggled a little bit with big nose tackles, and he has effectiveness in space is a little questionable. But I think if they get this guy right, he could be your future center. He could be the heir apparent to Ted Karras. I think, like Zim is saying, Trey Hill, get ready for the CFL, my boy. Get ready for one of those 54 jerseys that The Rock be having for the XFL, because that's where your future is going, my boy. I'm sorry, Matt Lee. Definitely is going to take this position. 22 years old, came out of a spread offense. I think he's definitely the pick of the future. And I'm glad that they did this, because Bengals fans were killing the Bengals on Twitter for not taking the interior protector. And so for them to get Matt Lee was good.
I was going to kill him, bro. Like, I don't like the depth behind. Like, I still feel like the Bengals said we like Cody Ford, Jackson Carmen as our interior guys off the bench when there were a multiple. There was a great opportunity. I thought I would grade our draft as a top eight, top six draft in the NFL had they done that one thing. Just move one of those picks out and give us another interior offensive line, because you're already signaling with the Burton pick and both of the tight ends, you're about to air it out. So you need pass protectors, and you need – and if somebody goes out, Karras goes out, now you have a legit guy that you feel good about, at least in pass pro. And then I want to feel the same confidence at the guard position, and I just thought that they didn't do that. So I guess that leads me into our Bengals draft grade. Where do you have the Bengals draft grade overall?
Man, I'm probably sitting at – I don't like – and I had a tweet about this. I don't like doing draft grades anymore because I feel like they're worthless. I feel like you don't know anything until you see them in the scheme. You don't know anything until you see them 3 years from now. Like, even with some of the top players, I mean, especially after seeing that 2020 redraft. But as it stands now, just to give people what they want, I'm probably looking at this as like a B to a B+. Like, I think that there were – a lot of needs answered. I think if you went into this telling me like the Bengals ended up getting trenches and weapons, I feel like they did a little bit of both. I like what they did with the tight end position. Love what they did with Jermaine Burton. Would have liked to have seen another possibly late receiver, but I'm not mad at that. Like, I'm not docking them because of that. The safety position pick, I just feel like that could have possibly have been another position, like whether that's interior offensive line or whether that's possibly a running back. The running back position did have a run on it as well, so they kind of missed out there. Or you could have used it as a tool to kind of trade up and get one of those guys that you really felt were falling. I just thought that they would take more advantage of the guys that were falling on day three than they ended up doing. So who's to say? Like, I feel like if you can come out of this draft with like three or four starters, I think it's a really good draft. And I think that they do have that. I mean, they took 10 swings at bat. My favorite picks were Jermaine Burton, Matt Lee. I think that they're going to get something from Tanner McLaughlin and possibly Eric All, but I'm going to bet on McLaughlin. And I think that they have something at least in Chris Jenkins and maybe McKinley Jackson. And I think Amarius Mims, if he ends up filling his potential, it'll be a really good draft. So I like it. I think that is very solid. I think that they kind of crossed off a lot of issues that they had going into the season. What about you?
I think I'm going to start off with all the good. I love them getting more weapons. I love them getting the best player I felt on the board at the part, Amarius Mims, them taking that guy. I just think that him long-term, I think, is going to be a good talking point for us to say, yeah, we not tripping off like that position at all. And it is easier to replace guards and interior offensive line in the years to come and in free agency. Like Max Sharpen, I wouldn't mind if they brought him back just to compete with guys on like a little low-level deal, whatever. I don't care. But I thought that what they did from Amarius Mims starting off and then Chris Jenkins, there aren't sexy picks, but we knew that this was going to be a trenches draft. And I thought they did a really damn good job of solidifying that part early in this draft. They gave themselves options and flexible things that they can do from the offensive line and defensive line position. They then did the Burton pick, which I think is like for all around the McKinley Jacksons of the world where people said they took it early, I feel like Burton fell right into their lap. Burton literally should have been drafted in like the second round if it weren't for character issues. That's like my second favorite pick of the draft by far. I'm a big wide receiver guy, I guess. I don't know. I just thought that they missed out on some other different things. And then running back, I don't feel like our room is strong enough. But I do think that role doesn't have to be anything crazy. You need to take the yards that they give you. And then you need somebody that can explode out the backfield. Pause. Or like Chase Brown. And that 1-2 punch of that, if it stays healthy, then you're good. The depth behind it with Travion Williams and stuff, I'm not really as high on. I think Chris Evans for the new kick return rules is going to be really good if he does make the roster. I don't know much about the UDFA guys or whatever, but I do think they have an opportunity.
The punter.
Yeah. And then the punter that we brought in too, I like that for competition for Robbins as well too. So overall, I was really, really on cloud nine. And then when we got to the Eric All pick, it kind of changed for me because I was at an A minus. And then when it got to Eric All, went to the safety in the corner, I'm like, what are we doing? I got down to a C plus. When they get the Matt Lee pick, then it pushed it up to me, and now I'm at a B minus. I thought that they had a lot of different opportunities to go and do some great stuff. B minus is really damn good. I think that's still like fringe. I probably said it if I were ranking it, I think they had like the 12th highest draft. I will say this. It's hard to project day one. And I know what you're saying, like as far as draft grades, people thinking that they know everything, whatever. I just know that there's some players that I really, really like. I don't really question the plan. These are people that get paid lots of money to be able to pick out guys, and they do it for a living. And we know some of them, and we talk directly to some of those guys. So I'm not mad at that part. And I think that they have opportunity to do some really good damn things. But I do think it is a draft that it's going to take a couple years for this to play out, especially McKinley Jackson and especially Chris Jenkins. Like those two and the Eric All pick. Those three picks right there, those aren't picks that you just cut on the screen in general.
And even Mims, because even he's Mims. Not, he might not, you know, start this season.
Yeah. All of this stuff, it is one of them picks, one of those drafts where it's going to take some time to see how this thing shakes out. So it's really hard to say if it's an amazing draft or it's a bad draft. I just thought the opportunity to go and fix that interior offensive line so that we could go into a position like next year. I wanted us to be in a position where we could go heavy edge, heavy like whatever, and just defense, boom, 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 weapons, like add another weapon, you know what I mean? But I think they made it so that now you got to go and strengthen that again. You know what I mean? Like you got, and we got to constantly go back to the offensive line when they had all those damn picks. And then, and my only other gripe with them where I'm at a B minus is they never traded up at any spot. And that's not a bad thing. If you got a wide receiver like Burton, you got the same grade as like a Franklin, you'd be like, why would I trade up? And I value these same players the same. But you did that for 10 guys. Like, I just find that hard to believe that you couldn't get up at once and go get one Johnny Newton or one whatever. I would have traded the 6-7. I would have traded three of those picks and my fourth to get, like, a top-level guy in that fourth-round spot. Like, I just don't think that the back end of those guys, I don't think they even make the roster. I think Cedric Johnson maybe, but doubt it. The safety, I don't think, makes the roster.
Yeah. So speaking of the draft that has wrapped up, and with that wrapping up, you guys might be looking at season tickets, especially with the schedule getting ready to be announced. Check out our guys, Fans of Cincy, fansofcincy.com. Your trips are going to include airfare tickets, hotel stay, game tickets, bus transportation, fan connections, and an all-inclusive tailgate that you'll be able to get catered food and drinks. And connect with their local vendors. They're going to have some upcoming trips this season, Nashville, Dallas, Charlotte, possibly Germany if the Bengals get the international game, LA and Pittsburgh. It is a good time. All you have to do is put down a deposit of $200 today, and you can book with Fans of Cincy, get your family trips out of the way. Something that you don't have to do is super convenient, allows you to go wherever you want. Sometimes they've been to beaches, all kind of stuff. It's always conveniently located next to the stadium. They have shuttles to and from the airport or to the game if necessary. Definitely be sure to check out Fans of Cincy. So head over to fansofcincy.com and check them out. And also, if you have any questions, which a lot of people do, you can reach out to them on Twitter at Fans of Cincy. Our guy Deuce Go there will get you guys taken care of. Great customer service. They'll answer any questions or concerns that you have. But get those booked now so you don't even have to worry about it. You can be on autopilot as the season comes. And you'll be good to go. But shout out to them. And then shout out to our other sponsor who had a great Project Game Day event where they had Corey Dillon, I believe, was there. And I think they had the Cincy Hat people there. So shout out to them. We're going to toss it to our good folks at Midwest Best Barbecue. Wings and them CTVs. Midwest Best is the place to be for curing wings. Midwest Best is the place to be for curing wings. It's the AC to the Zim, M into the B's.
Uno wings, Zebra wings, and them CTVs. Midwest Best is the place to be for Q and wings. Midwest Best is the place to be for Q and wings. Say what up to Jordan Battle, we be going to battle. Intercepting balls like CTV did on Seattle. Putting six up on AZ. Juice gang amazing. Make sure you come get these wings. The Zimby stay blazing. And T game be smooth as ice. Jamal making divas fold. TB got big levels and now you already know. So pretty for Uno wings. Cam got the new wings. We call them CTBs. Only at MB's. H to the Zim. M to the B's.
Shout out to Midwest Best Barbecue, 669 Justice Court in Loveland, Ohio. You can go there and get your Uno wings, your CTB wings, your G-Funk wings, barbecue, ice cream. They got it all. Make sure you stop through and let them know Ace and Zim sent you. If you are in town there for the draft, hopefully you stop by Midwest Best Barbecue and had a great time at the Project Game Day event that they had. That was dope. They're always supporting the Bengals community, so definitely be able to stop in there and let Tim and Nicole know that you support them in Midwest Best Barbecue. All right. Before we get into it, my bad. I was over here trying to get my cue cards together.
Let's talk about Dax in the comments.
Let's talk about Dax Hill. Dax Hill is officially moving to cornerback. What are your thoughts on that, bro? I mean, I got a lot because I remember people telling me he could never play outside corner. Prime kind of said that the Bengals would look at him as an outside corner, a nickel corner, and a safety. Now it seems like he's going to give it a try at boundary corner. What are your thoughts on that move, bro?
I think that the whole Dax Hill thing – I'm not calling him a bust, but this is not good. In your third NFL season, talking about moving a guy to a boundary corner to a new position, their dude's been playing this position their whole entire life. Like, I get it. I feel like he's super talented. I'm just not a big fan of that. I'd rather him go into the box, him and Von Bell split up. Like, maybe it's just semantics. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's semantics and he ends up playing safety and corner. I don't know. I hope that they have like a better plan than that. I just think that if he's got to go against DJ Turner on the outside, he's not winning that battle. Like, that's not happening. So now we're talking about Dax Hill as a backup boundary corner. You ain't never getting on the field then. So, like, to me, I think if they put him in the nickel at some points, Mike Hilton's going into the final year of his contract. Get him ready for that role. I think that it gives you a bigger slot, a guy that can make plays at the line of scrimmage, that can tackle. That's what I think that they should be grooming him for. And some of that has some safety responsibilities too. Him going on the outside, I think it lessens his value. If they were going to do that, they should have moved him before the draft. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. I know that he has played some boundary corner at Michigan, I think the last year. He hasn't played it that much in the NFL. He played a little bit of it. But for him to have to turn immediately into a boundary corner, I agree with Zim. Like, it's not putting him in a position to succeed. Now, to me, if they feel like he has a better chance at boundary corner than free safety, I really wonder, why they came away with that just from 1 year of him playing. But I can see the upside in this, man, because right now, if they have an injury or something, God forbid, at the position, like, maybe that's going to open it up for Dax Hill. Maybe I feel a little bit more comfortable with Dax playing in that role. The one thing that I always said, though, is I feel like if we were a man-to-man scheme, I'd be worried about Dax Hill playing corner on the outside. The fact that we're playing mostly zone, I'm not really – like, zone is an area. He just has to guard a certain area. So, for me, if he's not a man-to-man with someone and he's just protecting a particular zone – I'm good with that. And they kind of did like, so when we used to have Cheeto and Eli Apple, one of the ways that they hid Eli Apple is they had Eli Apple mostly run zone coverage. Now they had Cheeto run mostly man. So like, if they plan on using that approach with Dax Hill, with him being the zone guy and not really a man guy, I can kind of see it working and seeing that to be the approach. But like Zim is saying, if you're a backup boundary corner, how are you getting on the field? Like, how many snaps are you going to get in that role? And I think, like, to me, it makes more sense to give him some snaps on the outside. If he's going to be the third guy on the outside, give him those snaps and give him some of the backup snaps that you might have given to whoever is coming in for Mike Hilton on those snaps. I think that that's what you should do with him. But I do agree it's not looking good, man. And I mean, with this being as far as it's going, like, what does this mean for his option as a rookie? Are they going to do that? So let's see how this plays out. But it is not good, like Zim is saying, for sure. It's not looking good. But with that being said, we appreciate y'all for coming through, rocking with us. Zim, was there anything that you wanted to let the people know, any announcements that you wanted to make before we get up out of here?
No, make sure y'all check out Ace on NewStrikeCity.com. Make sure y'all go check him out on Playback as well, too. What's the name of your group one?
End Zone Exchange. It's Bengals plus NFL. So we're going to be talking about everything like football related over there. So definitely be sure to check that out. And definitely be sure to become a part of the Ringless Bandits. If you're not, I don't know what you're doing. If you're not on Playback, I don't know what you're doing, because you can watch video, all kind of stuff, do way more than you can actually do on X. I think it's called X now. You can do a lot more on X over there, and definitely be sure to tap in over there, because we'll be doing all kind of breakdowns over there as well. But definitely head to ZimHude.com. He's already got some Ringless Bandits merch. It's already out, bro?
No, I did a little soft one where I had where I did just for a second, just allow people to get the T1. We're going to hold off on a lot of that. It was a good amount of people that got them. So if you got one of the lucky ones, that's why you got to get on ZimHude.com when I release some stuff, and you can get one of those shirts or get some like some elite merchandise at that point. We actually did a giveaway on Playback and gave out too. So make sure y'all go to Playback for giveaways on the Ringless Bandits, you know, group or whatever. And we got a lot of cool stuff coming up on there as well. But yeah, be on the lookout. I got some really dope stuff for ZimHude.com that I'm working on as well.
Yep, likewise. And I'm also doing a jersey giveaway for my Playback as well. So you can get either, if the NBA is your thing and you're watching now, even if you a Ravens fan, like our guy, I think he's actually a Bengals fan, Aaron Butler. We got a jersey for you, too, if you go out there and do your thing. But Migos Reloaded, a lot of people want to see the Trace Amigos. It's coming. It's on the way. So stay tuned for that. We're going to drop that. That's pause. That's crazy. That was nasty.
If y'all watching this on X or Twitter, make sure y'all go to YouTube, because the comments section does get lit sometimes. If you're a fan of like some friendly banter, man, please come and come to Cincinnati Pod. Sure. Also, when this is over, tell us what you like about the draft. Tell us what you disagree with on the draft. Tell us what you liked about the draft, and what did you think about our grades that we gave on the draft? Comment at the end of this video.
For sure. That was crazy, like Lap talking about Amarius Mims. But thank you guys for listening to the Cincinnati Podcast. I am Ace, he is Zim. Definitely be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, so that way you stay in tune with the Cincinnati Podcast.
It's an exciting time to be a Bengals fan.
Now we got a special show as always. The voice of the Bengals,
Dan Moore,
Willie Anderson,
Corey Dillon.
The name of this thing is called Cincinnati, and I'm not going to stop.
Talk to us about that roller coaster season.
I'm still going to give you the same AJ.
I'm going to work as hard as I can to be the best.
Always working ever since I met y'all, boy.
I got to get you a top five receiver.
Watch out for us.